Radio 6 point something?
7? What do you call it? 7?
Supplemental?
Seven.
It's a signing day podcast, so it is a little bit of an unusual one. But Michigan has signed most of
people?
Their class at this point.
More than I thought they would, given the circumstances.
Well, so they have a couple of defensive decommits today, and Jaden McBurrows is announcing at 8. Between, I believe, Miami and Michigan. And I think the overall thought there is that he is going to stick with Michigan. In addition, Jaden Hood, a four-star linebacker from St. Thomas Aquinas, is deciding to sign in the late period.
Which,
so he's keeping his options open. Say that like he wants to get up to Michigan and see it. So I feel like depending on the way the coaching stuff all falls out, like he'll probably be more likely than not to be in the class, but honestly probably making a smart move by waiting to see what's out there.
Yeah, I'm surprised any of them sign these things, but I mean, Michigan lost a linebacker today, so you know, that's one less guy that he's got to worry about, and the depth chart, no matter who's coaching, looks pretty nice for a linebacker who's coming in this season. So
hey man, any linebacker who shows up at Michigan and lasts more than one season probably in the two deep. So
Speaking of people who've lasted more than one season, MGO Radio is brought to you by Underground Printing in the Bose Store. Get started on your custom apparel today by ordering at undergroundshirts.com. Use the promo code HOLIDAY for 25% off your next purchase. Let's also not leave out our associate sponsors, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, The Residence in Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, and Information Entropy.
All right, so Michigan's class currently stands 10th on 24/7 in their composite rankings. So, you know, given everything that's happened with the program this year, things could be much, much worse. And, you know, I think having J.J. McCarthy, a five-star quarterback who was going to be at Michigan no matter who the coach was, he said that pretty explicitly, being able to, like, rally these guys and keep them in the class was absolutely huge.
Him and Junior Colson, the Tennessee linebacker, who's not ranked as highly and he's not a quarterback, but I think he probably did just as much as any other guy. And you're talking about, you know, an IMG quarterback and a linebacker who was in that, like, high four-star range from Tennessee, had all the SEC offers. Ole Miss made a last, you know, ditch push at him. And, you know, him sticking around, I think, gave both those guys gave some credibility to the class that, like, hey, you know, there's going to be some players here if you show up. Whoever's coaching Michigan, there's going to be Michigan level talent on this team.
Yeah, which made some of the Ari Wasserman takes pretty strange. But I mean, that just says everything about the OSU beat is like the guy at the Athletic. So like the best available Ohio
right.
State guy is out there like flinging message board threads about how Michigan fans have accepted mediocrity, and I'm like, well, what else am I supposed to do at this point?
First, like, of all, Ari, yes, my team is 2-4. I don't know what you're expecting, but two, like, he's wrong. This weirdly could, I mean, it could finish Harbaugh's best class, and it's still at least, like, you know, one of his best classes.
Well, I mean, there's some talent in it, but there's also some ominous flaws that I think are all the more ominous for the events of this season.
Right.
So for one, there is one cornerback in this class.
If he signs,
may or
today.
May not stick.
Right.
And he's a three-star ranked 550th.
Yeah.
And to look at this roster and go through the recruiting process and come back with one three-star cornerback is like, what are we doing? And then the number of defensive tackles in this class is zero. Zero defensive tackles.
I mean,
know that Gudis probably going to bulk
Gudis
up
is
and
a tackle.
Stuff,
yeah.
Sure, fine. But he's also like the number 41 kid in New Jersey.
Right.
Like, he's not even ranked in the top 1,000 in the composite. So, like, that's your defensive tackle. I mean, I don't really see how this defense recovers next year to a point where you're feeling happy about another year of Harbaugh. There's no immediate help coming in. Cornerback is a spot where you can get immediate help, but Michigan did not.
Right. I mean, fortunately for Michigan, I don't know how they're going to play it, but this is going to be a very weird year where a lot of guys have eligibility and their teams really can't use them anymore. So, you know, there's going to be some crazy transfer market things going on this year and next year. If you, you know, if you find yourself in a need, which I'm pretty sure Michigan's going to be, I think if anyone could play, they would have this year out of the guys they have. And that might be your options. And then, you know, if you can survive on some transfers for a little bit, then you can get some, there's some five stars on the way, possibly in 2022.
I don't know if I'd count those chickens just yet, but let's start running down the class position by position. At quarterback, of course, we mentioned McCarthy, who transferred down to IMG this year when football in Illinois was either canceled or looking extremely dicey. I'm sorry, I forget the internal politics of the Illinois High School Athletics Association. But, you know, 6'3", a guy who's been through all the hoops, had a extensive high-profile season at IMG, and nobody was like, all right, we were wrong about this guy.
Right.
Like, we need to move him down. So that's, I think, encouraging given the fact that, you know, he completed 77% of his passes as a sophomore, which is a number so high that you worry about it a little bit. Like, what did those passes look like?
Right. Were you an all-screen game or something?
Right. Like, it just feels like he's at that level based on a ridiculous sophomore season. What happens if he moves somewhere else? The numbers come down a little bit because those are unsustainable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then people are like, maybe this guy's not a five-star. That didn't happen. So very good positive sign about McCarthy, and he's obviously a guy who rallies guys around him, which is something Michigan's had some issues with at quarterback in recent years. So two positive developments for him, and I feel like I don't want to put him in the starting lineup as soon as he arrives on campus because true freshman quarterbacks, even five stars, are going to be going through a major adjustment period. And that puts another kind of hard cap on Michigan's upside in a year where, you know, they,
yeah,
they it's going to be hard for anyone to be really happy. Right. So, and I think McCarthy, unless Michigan just gets luckier than all belief, is probably going to have to wait his turn a little bit.
I mean, it's good to have another, yeah, it's good to have a bullet in your chamber that's like, okay, this guy was the five-star from IMG. His floor is probably not going to be Dan Villari, which is where we were this year if we had played the last couple games.
Yeah, so, and he's a guy who is a modern quarterback, does a lot of RPO stuff, won't have troubles, I don't think, making post-snap reads, which is something that now feels incredibly urgent. So obviously an absolute critical pickup for Michigan in a year where they really needed a five-star type quarterback to hold the class together. Also the first five-star quarterback Michigan has recruited since
Chad Henne.
Yes. Correct.
Wait, no. After Henne was Ryan Mallett.
Oh,
which that's right. But yes, Chad Henne.
It's hard to remember him as a five-star prospect. Anyway, at running back, Michigan's biggest pickup of the day, Donovan Edwards from West Bloomfield, you know, a guy who's coached by Ron Bellamy, so those guys are always going to at least give Michigan a look. They may not all always get there, but top 50 guy nationally, fringe of five-star status to
which is where we want our running backs to be.
Right. I mean, great pickup, but also, like, How much impact is Donovan Edwards going to have next year versus not having Donovan Edwards?
Right.
Right? Like, you have Corum, you have Haskins, you have Charbonnet. Christian Turner's probably going to transfer at this point, but I still like him as a player.
I know, but people have been talking about Jay Harbaugh, and, like, that guy's not getting enough credit for the room that he built. Because, like you said, like, you know, Christian Turner is our sixth favorite guy now in that running back room, and we like that guy a lot. Like, that is worlds different than some previous running backs rooms where we're like, hope Caron Higdon works out, you know?
Oh, he did work out. Like, that wasn't
a
bad did.
Room. No. No, but when Caron Higdon was coming in, it was kind of touch and go. Anyway, we don't need to we don't need to litigate running back room as a past. Donovan Edwards does have a role because they still have not been thrown to the running backs very much. Like, we got that play to Quorum, like, on the first play of the year. And this guy, yeah. I mean, even more than Evans, you have to throw to him because he is kind of built like a receiver and did a lot of receiver things in high school. And, you know, he's got the ability to go downfield and actually contest those things. So if that guy's matched on a linebacker all the time, there's some fun to be had.
Yeah, at some point I got to, like, see it happen before people talking about it happening. Feels like a real thing to me.
Right, but I mean,
so
your other guys, like, you know, Haskins, we haven't seen him do that. They talked about him being a good pass catcher in practice. We haven't seen that out of Charbonnet before. Quorum is kind of a small guy. Like, I'm sure you can catch the ball on a screen, but, you know, going up against people might be a little difficult. And so, you know, they were using receivers.
Edwards isn't huge either. He's 5'10". He's the running back height. So, I mean, I think, you know, if you're looking at guys currently on this roster, he's probably the closest to Quorum, just in terms of his stature and his athleticism and his ability to operate out of the backfield and in the wide spaces horizontally. Obviously, Quorum's a little bit shorter and a little bit faster, I think, but obviously a very solid pickup for Michigan. The only problem is, like, we're thinking about, all right, how does this change the immediate future of the program? And with Donovan Edwards, the answer is probably not that much.
Yeah, yeah.
Michigan also picks up Tavier Dunlap,
he's
running back out of Texas, who is kind of in that mid-3-star range. He's a 3.5-star by our reckoning. 24/7 did actually move him up significantly mid-cycle, so he's 238 to them. And we always like guys who rise on 24/7 but stick as 3-stars because those are candidates for sleeper of the year. Not in this running back room, Mr. Dunlap. But
yeah, man, like you saw what they did with Haskins, and the thing about Dunlap is his film is all like trucking a guy and then running 90 yards.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be, I mean, he's the Haskins of this class, right? Mm-hmm. He's in the 4.6 range. His 100 meter is 11.2. So he's not going to be a flat out burner, but what he can be is he can be a 6'1" running back who plays at 220 and just lowers the boom on guys.
Which, as we've seen, is kind of nice, especially when your offensive line is kind of missing dudes. Like, you know, Haskins is, I don't even want to compare someone to him because I think he's a fantastic back and has a lot better vision than people give him credit for. But, like, same kind of ability that you see that in Dunlap a lot, too, that he sees the holes forming before they get there, and it's kind of hard to get a good shot at him, which for a big back like that, it's just devastating, right? Like, Blake Corum, it's hard to get a shot on him, too, but if you do get a good, if you do line him up, he'll go down, and that does not happen with Dunlap. He's going to shrug you off unless you really hit him between the shoulder or between the knees.
Yeah, so a nice thunder and lightning combo. Kind of feels like Dunlap's headed for some sort of either red shirt or one of those years where it's like, this guy probably should have redshirted just because he's got 4 or even 5 guys in front of him coming up.
Yeah. And that's fine. With everyone, you have an extra year of eligibility. I have a feeling the running back room might kind of clear out as time progresses, right? Just like, you know, there's only so many carries to go around, and some of those guys are going to have NFL eligibility before.
I mean, Evans has already signed up for the Shrine game, so he'll be gone.
Right.
You know, there's been some rumors that Charbonnet has been unhappy. I can't imagine that his usage this year was in line with his expectations. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I think if Christian Turner couldn't even get on the field this year, the writing's on the wall there.
Right.
And some mid-major team is going to have a 1,500-yard back if he can block.
And hold on to the ball.
And hold on to the ball.
Yeah, but if we get first pick out of these guys, that's fine. I would like them to hold on to at least a couple of those guys for at least, you know, maybe a year or two, so, you know, we can get this sorted out. But
yes, some variety of continuity would be lovely. Right. Moving on to wide receiver, Michigan holds on to Xavier Worthy,
yes,
which is unfathomable because he's the fastest guy in the country. Or at least as an argument.
Yeah.
And has moved up 100 spots in the rankings since his commitment, because upon his commitment, he was a 3-star at Rivals. And like not even the 5'7" three-star, the 5'6" three-star, where it's just like, yeah, we looked at this guy and
it's
not
really. we haven't looked at this guy. It's like this guy didn't go to one of our camps 5.6. So we'll look at him.
I mean, that's not like the 5.5 is like the default three-star rating. So 5.6 is like we evaluated this guy and this was our opinion. But anyway, he's put up a 10.500 meter. People were expecting him to run in the 10.3 range this year before COVID did all its COVID stuff. And if you watch his film, every bit of that translates to the football field.
Yeah, this is a guy who could step in and do most of what Ronnie Bell does over, like immediately. And then once he gets his routes down and you hate to say Anthony Carter, but like that is like the chicken legs are so direct and he wears his socks all the way up too, and like it's hard not to see that.
Yeah, I mean he's just I remember coach, what's his last name?
Heklinski.
But there was the guy who has a podcast and is doing some internet stuff. He basically superimposed himself over a highlight of Xavier Worthy with his like live reaction to him. It was mostly giggling.
Oh yeah.
and just being like, what am I watching? And that was exactly my reaction as well. I was like, yep, this is how I am feeling watching this, because he has another gear beyond all the other highlight films you've seen of guys. So, you know, these guys are always outrunning dudes in the open field. Remember Zach Gentry running 80 yards on back-to-back plays. but he just takes it to an absolute another level. And this is the, I think, third straight year Michigan has acquired a wide receiver who has a decent argument as the fastest kid in the country. Roman Wilson last year, a year before that, Giles Jackson. So if Michigan is going to hold on to Xavier Worthy over Alafrican Bama, I gotta expect that Josh Gattis will be back next year as long as Harbaugh is.
Yeah, and maybe even if Harbaugh is not, that's, you know, it's always a possibility as well. But at least it seems to me that him signing and some of the other guys who kind of waffled for a bit on offense, we're waiting to hear what would happen with Gattis and got some sort of assurance that he's going to be coaching them, because these are Gattis's guys. This is what Gattis came in for, right?
Yeah. Well, he also picked up a couple of more possession-oriented receivers in this class. Christian Dixon, a four-star, ranked 221 on the composite out of California, 6'2", so he's not Nico Collins size, but he'll be playing at 200 or 210. He's already about 190. A guy that, you know, we were just talking about how we really like it when 24/7 is higher on guys than other services. He's not very well regarded by 24/7. He's the number 105 wide receiver, which is a pretty big gap from the composite, which has him 38th. So that's a little bit of a concern, especially because his shuttle is a 4.6 shuttle. His 40 was also 4.6, which isn't – I take a 4.6 40 from a guy who's 6'2 and projects as a leapy downfield guy, because that's adequate. That's fine. Right. The shuttle is like, don't know about that one. But, you know, he kind of projects as maybe an Amara Darboh.
Yeah. I mean, it's been hard to get a read on him, partially because of COVID, also because he was he transferred to a team that was just loaded, right? It's like the Zeb Jackson disease, where like he's
the Zeb, yeah.
He's just kind of the third dude in a two-man rotation with, like, you know, two guys who are going to be five stars in front of him. And his quarterback, I don't think, really bothered to throw his way even when he was on the field, which, you know, that's you don't even come across that with a guy who's a three-star normally. So it's been really hard to read him, because, like, you know, you just like to see him get some passes.
Yeah, it's I mean, you really don't see gaps that large between recruiting services that much. Sometimes ESPN will just come in with a total wing nut eval of a guy and it'll be way off. But for this guy to be a top 250 guy and also be probably well down the 24/7 rankings is it's going to be interesting to see how this works out.
Yeah. I mean, just a quick note on those services before we move on to him. Like ESPN, you know, they fire and forget, right? They'll look at a guy, you'll get a good evaluation of them at that moment, but then he stays there. They don't usually, like, I can't remember the last time ESPN moved a guy 100 spots. If next it was like J.D. Johnson, who, you know,
well, no, they'll pick certain guys and move them significantly. But you're right that like guys by and large aren't getting reevaluated in mass. They're just, you know, they'll update 20 or 25 guys.
Right. Right. And then the other two services will have the things they're looking at. Sometimes I think they're looking at different things. I think 247, just like basketball, tries to project NFL ability, which every receiver is fine.
Yeah.
And then and Rivals, you know, they sometimes overrate the guys who go to their own camps, but, you know, they're at least doing the same thing. They're reevaluating guys and listening to coaches a lot. But I think Rivals more than 247 trust their own evaluators. So sometimes you just get a guy who just didn't like someone or saw him and formed an opinion, and that's it.
And the final guy in this class is Andrel Anthony, who's out of East Lansing, which was fun.
Yep.
So Michigan picked him up, and then immediately afterwards, Marcus Allen, a wide receiver out of Ohio, decommitted. So I kind of felt like those two events were related, and he's another, you know, he's 6'2". He's a little bit skinnier than Dixon, but he's a guy who's probably not going to be your star burner, but he's going to be a guy who could be your number two wide receiver, operate underneath, and then also be able to go high point balls downfield a little bit.
Yeah, and they do need a couple guys who are not just running straight downfield. I mean, I know Gaddis is all about his speed, but Anthony, Anthony's a guy that I think is probably a little underrated because he's so thin right now. But there's a lot of opportunity for him to kind of bulk up a bit. And a bulked up version of him really is a bleepy. Junior Hemingway is actually a possibility there. And I know that like that's not what he looks like right now. But Hemingway kind of looked like this coming out of high school too. And then he got stronger. And that ability to leap and the high point of ball that Anthony has really served him. And then he was just kind of, it was just weird to us whenever he broke a tackle and ran afterwards.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's offensive skill positions minus a tight end. We're going to take a break, come back, talk about that tight end in a 4-man offensive line class.
We're in the home stretch of 2020, and New Year's is right around the corner. What better way to ring in the new year with some great custom apparel? Our friends at Underground Printing have you covered with awesome custom tees and hoodies and low affordable prices. They also have tons of great Michigan apparel that you can proudly wear to support the maize and blue. Get started on your custom apparel order today on a much better year at undergroundshirts.com and use the promo code HOLIDAY for 25% off your next purchase.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the big house and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Mm-hmm.
right, we are back with MGO Blog Radio 6.9.
7.
Nice.
No, 7's fine.
7 point whatever.
Why do we even put numbers on them? It just makes it worse.
I don't know. Okay. It does. It's a shtick. We're here to the big uglies, and we start with the smallest of the big uglies, who's actually not that ugly. Tight end Lewis Hansen out of Massachusetts. You know, anybody who comes out of Massachusetts and is a tight end, even in our sort of Harbaugh letdown period, I'm pretty much fine with grabbing a tight end and working on them until they're bigger and more athletic downfield. So he's actually a 4-star ranked in the top 300. And because he's out of Massachusetts, though, you get very, very little information on him. So
yeah, we're kind of used to this now, and I wonder if the rankings are not so much that like the sites all of a sudden said, hey, this guy's good, or the sites said, hey, every single tight end that these guys get out of Massachusetts seems to be really good. Let's just hedge our bets this time.
Well, I mean, so I think it's telling that on his 24/7 profile, they list his weight as 200 pounds because that's the latest number they got, and it's 2 years ago.
Right.
So, I mean, he's a guy who's 6'5", and is clearly growing into his body. They list him at 232. So, but he's going to take probably a year or two to beef, and then we're going to see what he's able to do along the lines of all of them. You know,
yeah.
Kuhn, Schoonmaker. There's just a particular version of the Michigan tight end that under Harbaugh that will always be the same and will never change, and it'll be fine. And you just wonder whether these guys are going to take to blocking and how, like, what their playing weight is going to be. But, you know, because he wasn't a camp guy, played in Massachusetts, committed very early, the amount of information out there on Lewis Hansen is minimal.
Yeah, he did do a pretty good job of being kind of a mini J.J. McCarthy as far as bringing this class together. Like, he was really evangelizing Michigan out in the East. I know, like, you know, we credit Don Brown for a lot of that, but this was a guy who was kind of working on a lot of the Eastern recruits that they were after this year, and they got a whole boatload of them again and kept them in when things looked bad, too. So I want to give credit where due. Hansen seems to be a pretty go-blue guy.
Yeah, Steve Lorenz did mention that in a workout for Michigan, he ran a 4.7, which is pretty good for a tight end. He might be in that McCune range where he's, you know, a solid player, but I don't think anyone is expecting a massive star with him. I mentioned that Michigan had 4 offensive linemen in this class. It's 4 guys coming out of high school, but I should mention Willie Allen, who transferred in from Louisiana Tech, where he was their starting left tackle last year. Played a few games this year, and then they had COVID issues, and he was just like, I'm out. And so Michigan brings him in, and this is going to be one of the more unusual players on Michigan's roster in a long time, because he was a top 100 recruit out of high school who committed to LSU, was at LSU for a year, ended up at a JUCO, ended up at Louisiana Tech, kind of established himself as a D1 offensive lineman, and now he's going to be 6'8" and 300 million pounds. And he's going to try to get a starting job on the Michigan offensive line, which looked like a strange place for a guy like Willie Allen to transfer, just because, you know, there's a lot of guys coming up, and you probably have your left tackle returning in Ryan Hayes. So what's the opportunity for him? But if Mayfield goes still, I would say he might be the favorite to start at right tackle, given what we've seen. You really want to be able to move Stuber back inside, and then Carson Barnhart, I think the left guard job might be a good spot for Carson Barnhart next year. Then, especially because, I mean, the projected starting center is now headed to Cincinnati as a transfer. So he'll be a 1-year stopgap, obviously, but he's an intriguing guy.
Yeah. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But, I mean, like you said, a pretty high upside on him. He's a guy who's seen a lot of football, and he's seen a lot of life. This is a guy who, like, had to swim out of the Hurricane Katrina, like, his family lost everything in that. And then, you know, I went through his Twitter a little bit because I was in the middle of running a hello post for him that got sidelined for something else. But kind of a Grant Newsom vibe. Like, he is a very mature dude who's got a pretty good idea what he wants to do after. Yeah, not as a player, as a person. Like,
yeah, I was about to say, like, he's 6'8", 3'4".
Right,
he's
an
absolutely giant human who you're like, can he pass protect?
Right. No, but I mean, it's just like as a personality, kind of one of those guys you want to have around your program. And, you know, even if it doesn't work out, I think he'll work out. I think that's kind of a guy that they haven't had a lot of fifth-year seniors on the team lately. And, you know, this is a pretty adult person, you know, the guy who's seen a lot of life at this point already. And like you said, a 6'8 dude, there's a lot, there's a lot you can go with that.
Yeah, the actual freshman in this offensive line class, two tackles, two centers. Obviously, the centers could probably play guard, but Giovanni El-Hadi was actually the first commit in this class, I believe. Michigan found him at a camp, recruited him hard, and once the sights got wind that he was an athletic 6'6 guy who could play at 300 easily, they moved him into the top 100, and he kind of had one of those slides where nobody's reevaluating him, mm-hmm. but people blow up and move in front of him. So, you know, at one point, I think he was close to 50th. He ends up 85th on the composite. But I don't think that reflects on El-Hadi. It's just people didn't change their opinion of him, and they changed their opinion of a number of other guys.
I think it's more incredible if you're going to be a number 50th guy and only fall to 85th after he's been committed for so long. That is actually really incredible with offensive linemen. Because what happens is, like, the guys who are huge really early, right? The guy who just, like, springs up and, okay, this guy's 6'6", 300, and he can play. Let's put him up there. And then 2 years later, he's dropped 100, 200 spots, and everybody else is kind of caught up to him, right? He was just notable for being big early. That's not El-Hadi at all. He is continued to impress. High school coaches around Michigan kind of talk about that guy in terms of, like, I hate going all the way back, but I remember Gabe Watson and the way we used to talk about him in high school. I know this is way back, but like when I was in high school, and like it was a legend, right? The things that this guy would do, he would lift so much, or you know, did you hear last game? Like two guys tried to block him, and he picked them up and planted them both on top of the quarterback. And he's got a lot of stories coming out of high school like that. Like there has been talk about him in the state of Michigan for years now, and because he committed so long ago and because there was so much intrigue going on with other linemen around Michigan who didn't end up going to Michigan, I think it kind of got lost how exciting this prospect is and that, like, this really is the best offensive lineman to come out of Michigan in quite some time.
Well, and the way that his scouting goes is extremely encouraging. So Alan True on his 24/7 scout says he has great bend, flexible, good twitch, very good in pass protection. So really the only thing you're worried about there is like, okay, does he have the frame, the height, the arm length to be a left tackle? And that's, I mean, I think that is going to be kind of the separation point between whether he's a really high-level NFL prospect or just a solid one. You know, reminds me of Jalen Mayfield, the way he kind of came out of nowhere. Michigan found him pretty early in the cycle, committed, and then the recruiting sites caught up with him. So, obviously, a very good pickup. The other tackle is Tristan Bounds, who's one of those 6'8", 285 guys, kind of in the fray mold. You're going to have to, you know, redshirt, slap some meat on, see what you got. He's in the 3.5-star range. He's 419 overall. And another guy who doesn't really have a lot of scouting out there on him.
Yeah, although, and I can't even remember which guy said it, but like one of the sites had a comment from one of the coaches that like there were so many good tackle prospects Michigan was in on early on. Like Caleb Tiernan was in state, Garrett Dellinger was in state, forget the guy's name, David Davikoff, who went to Iowa. There were all these tackles they were in on, and then there were like some elite guys, Nolan Rucci, like who Michigan thought they had a shot at. And like at one point, I guess one coach turned to another in earshot of some people and said, "God, it would really suck if we have to send Bounds to Notre Dame because we, you know, there's so many guys we are going after." So it was kind of one of those things where the class, you know, a lot of the A-plus targets went other places, and then the other targets went other places, and then they got to like, okay, I guess we can actually pursue Bounds, but very high ceiling on that guy. You mentioned the Greg Frey type and the Latest one is still kind of working his way through the program, but very similar vibe to him, where he's like a tight end 2 years ago, and then all of a sudden converts to offensive tackle, and, you know, he didn't have a senior season, so there's even less to go on than normal.
Right. Didn't have a senior season, was in Connecticut before that, so honestly, for a guy in his situation to be ranked as highly as he is pretty encouraging, but very much a boom or bust kind of prospect, which is fine because in El Hadi, you have a pretty good bet to hit. So it's a good swing given the situation Michigan's in.
Yeah.
Two centers, Raheem Anderson out of Cass Tech, Greg Crippen, who was at IMG with J.J. McCarthy, so that might give him a little bit of an early leg up. Both guys ranked in the 200 to 300 range. Crippen was a Notre Dame commit who we believe got processed. And another guy who 24/7 is lower on than the industry, which could be a little bit of a warning sign. Raheem Anderson, pretty much in line with his composite ranking. And there's not a whole lot to say about centers. It's, you know, they're usually a little bit shorter than guards. They're usually a little bit smaller. But, you know, if Anderson's already 6'3 to 298, and Crippen's 6'4, those guys are going to be big enough at some point to be candidates at guard. So I don't think the fact that they're both ideally centers is a problem. And I like getting centers because guys who project to center are usually very smart. They're usually pretty agile. And you see that intelligence is a very, very important characteristic for offensive linemen. So I always like an OC next to a recruit's name.
Yeah, and you remember with Ruiz, with Cesar Ruiz, like he came in, he played a little bit of guard as a freshman, but he was like ready to go. And some of the line problems that existed before him just went away. And part of that was because he got coaching at center for most of his career, which is very rare out of college linemen, right? Like, or a high school lineman. Like, you have a guy who's big enough to play offensive line in college, you put that guy left tackle because that's where you put him on a high school team. But, you know, Crippen was at IMG, so he really got to get a lot of the same, basically the same training that Cesar got. And then, you know, Raheem Anderson at Cass Tech, people have been seeing that guy play for years. I think he was starting at Cass Tech as a freshman. So he's played
a lot. He was a center his whole career.
Yeah.
At Cass.
Yeah.
So that's another thing you just love to see. You'd like to see a center who's spent his whole career there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just the fact that they don't have to spend a year learning how to snap the ball first, you know, they've both kind of bled their offenses for a long time. And if one of them ends up at guard, it's fine. Cause you know, like you said, they're both 298. the same people who saw Mike Onwenu saw a lot of Raheem Anderson. And, you know, they'll make the obvious comparison and then say, like, but he's not a Wayne because nobody is. But like,
nobody is.
Yeah, but he's a smaller version of that. And the underrated thing about Onwenu is he was a fantastic pass protector, and you're seeing that in the NFL now, too. And a lot of pass protection is not just size. It's, you know.
Some people saw it when he was in college. Spend whole sections of posts just bitching about Michigan's best OL.
Never mind,
I'm over it.
This is me patting you on the back. I'm patting you on the back via,
all right,
via online right there. There you go.
I appreciate that. That's good.
Yes, but pass protection is a lot about knowing where the pressure is coming from, especially in the middle. And it's much about that as being able to anchor down and stop them from, you know, beating you. So that is, you know, a guy who's been playing this for that long, I think might be a pretty good pass protector, whether he ends up at guard or center.
Yeah, so, I mean, overall, this is a class, if you're just looking at the offensive side of the ball, you have a five-star quarterback, you have a top 100 receiver in Xavier Worthy, you have a top 50 running back in Donovan Edwards, you have a top 100 offensive tackle in Giovanni Elhadi, you have a four-year starter at center in Raheem Anderson. Like, I think there's a lot to like about this class at every level. And, you know, they've got a good stock of skill position players now. And if J.J. McCarthy's a hit, then you could see Michigan's offense go places it hasn't yet under Harbaugh. And obviously, when you pick up 4 OL, and the worst ranked of them is 419, you're probably going to get a couple of hits in there. And I particularly like Elhadi as a prospect. So very well done. And now we're going to take a break. and spend one segment talking about the defense because there's not that many guys in the class left.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
We're in the home stretch of 2020, and New Year's is right around the corner. What better way to ring in the new year with some great custom apparel? Our friends at Underground Printing have you covered with awesome custom tees and hoodies and low affordable prices. They also have tons of great Michigan apparel that you can proudly wear to support the Maize and Blue. Get started on your custom apparel order today on a much better year at undergroundshirts.com and use the promo code HOLIDAY for 25% off your next purchase.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. One in three online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
MGO Radio 600.176424 next.
You got it right this time. Congratulations.
Good. That's excellent. So we're going to change our focus to the defensive side of the ball. But before we get to that, which is slightly depressing, we're going to talk about Tommy Doman, the punter,
yes.
Largely because I just looked up the 24/7 punter rankings. There are 18 ranked punters by 24/7. Doman is second. So that's pretty good. But what I really want to bring up is that 10 of the 18 ranked kickers are Australian. A majority of punters are going to be Australian in like 3 years. It's insane.
Have you seen the Aussies punt? It's correct. I mean,
I've seen the Aussies punt.
But
it's just,
of course, the one time crazy. Michigan tries it, the guy is A, awesome, and B, so famous for something so awful that we can never touch it again. This is cursed Michigan punting in like 2003, and it's just been every time Michigan tries to modernize, like everything's just gonna fall apart on them.
Yes, I was trying to make this section slightly less depressing before we got into the defense, but you managed to bring it down with a very, very MGO blog of you, Seth.
Well, thank you, Brian. I thought that I should set the mood because now people can like feel better knowing that we've got TJ Guy instead of like feel terrible about having TJ Guy, which they should not.
All right. Well, so Michigan's defensive recruiting is not their offensive recruiting. After a couple of defections, they're down to just 2 4-stars in the class, pending Jaden Hood either deciding to sign with Michigan in the late period or not. And none of those guys are, only one of them is even close to the top 100. That's Junior Colson, who we'll get to in a minute. But we're starting with the defensive line. Our other 4-star is Kaytron Bennett, who's out of Connecticut, a weak side end right now, just kind of snuck in underneath that 4-star borderline And, you know, we've said this before, didn't have a senior season, doesn't really get a lot of scouting because he's in Connecticut. You know, he's a wrestler. That's always a positive for a defensive lineman. He's also, you know, a Don Brown pull out of New England. And if there's a Don Brown pull out of New England that I'm just going to accept, it's going to be a defensive end after Quiddy Pay, maybe a Viper.
Sure. And we'll get to the Quiddy Pay guy in a minute, literally the guy. But, I mean, Bennett, I think, is a – he's coming in as kind of an OLBDE. Like, he's I don't think he's going to end up as an Uche, but he's kind of coming down that Jalen Harrell track. You know, I want to go back further, like Brennan Breyer and Clark and all those guys. Yeah. They all come in as like outside linebackers, and then over time they bulk up to 250, 255, and then become a defensive end. And, you know, he seems totally fine for that role. I think, like you said, there's not a whole lot to go on. But, like, you know, as far as Don Brown recruits, like, he was playing for the Choate Academy in Connecticut. Like, they've produced some pretty good players, and they're
Suffield, actually.
Suffield, yeah. Sorry. One of the best players to come out of that area in a while. And also Notre Dame was really after them too, and, you know, Notre Dame is up there with Don Brown as far as scouting East Coast players.
Yeah. Speaking of the guy you were talking about, TJ Guy,
yes,
is ranked just inside the top 1,000, 6'4", 240 Don Brown find out of Mansfield, Massachusetts.
And this is the Quiddy comp right here, because he's an extreme athlete. He's been playing football longer than Quiddy had, but not much longer, and people have gotten out to see him. This year he was probably going to move way up the rankings. I know Rivals EJ Holland like fell in love with him when he went out there and watched him play. Like, he couldn't stop talking about him even in other recruits' profiles, like, for the rest of the trip. And 24/7, I think, was waiting to see him come to a camp, which got canceled, in order to bump him up. Testing numbers are pretty high too. And he was just murdering competition out there, which is what you expect at that point. So bulk him up, yeah. And I think that Michigan, I trust Don Brown knows what he's looking at, and this is a, you know, guy is more than a guy. Sorry! Sorry, you have to do it!
No, you say you have to do it, and then you don't. And then the other defensive lineman in the class is Dominic Jadice, who's out of New Jersey.
Jadice. We'll get it.
He's the number 41 player in New Jersey. He's not ranked inside the top 1,000. Michigan is planning on bulking him up and playing him in as a defensive tackle, and that's a disaster. I mean, not because of him personally, but just for the fact that he is currently the only defensive tackle in this class, and Michigan desperately needs defensive tackles in quality and quantity, and to go essentially consecutive years without recruiting anyone who's heavier than 250 pounds to play defensive tackle is completely inexplicable.
Yeah, well, I think he's up to 285, or he reported he was at one point, but he's also, yeah. I mean, he's already getting bigger, and that's another thing. We didn't have a senior season to look at him, and defensive tackles, like, those guys look like defensive ends when they're 16. That said, you know, if this is your fourth guy in the class, you're like, oh, cool, you know, they're taking a shot at a guy, and they might have Ryan Glasgow. If he's your only defensive tackle in the class, and, you know, you're already thin at that position, that is pretty questionable. Michigan, for their part, they stuck by him the whole time. Michigan never seemed to waver on wanting him in the class, which was kind of... You remember when he committed, like...
I mean, that means something different when, like, you know...
You're right.
Michigan didn't pick up any recruits, so, like, it's like, all right, well, this guy's in a class. And Rashad Weaver, who got processed by Michigan, got processed because Michigan took someone else. Michigan was trying to take other defensive tackles. They just didn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm grasping a little bit, but... You remember when he committed, it was like the beginning of COVID, and he was like sending out tweets or videos of himself like working out. And we're like, okay, great Harbaugh bait, kid. It's not going to, oh, it worked. He got it. And it was a little too easy to make fun of at the time.
Well, I'm processing is a reality, and we don't like it, but it's just something that happens these days. And I mean, Giudice didn't get an offer from another power. Giudice didn't get an offer from another Power Five team. He got offers from the service academies, some MAC teams, Harvard. So it's just really hard to project that guy into a top level contributor. And yeah, maybe you can get a rotational defensive tackle out of that. Maybe you get really, really lucky. And it's fine that he's in the class, but you know, you can't recruit just this guy at defensive tackle.
And the coaches are obviously aware of it because like they were really hard after George Rooks, who I think is visiting Penn State tomorrow, so that might be out of...
Yep.
But you know, that was a guy they had a good shot at until the season kind of fell apart. And
Rayshon Benny.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, Rayshon Benny, like they were trending for him the right way forever, and then they lost to Michigan State, and that kind of opened the door because Michigan State was really kind of targeting him as like, we have to win something. We lost the Andrew Anthony thing. We're looking like idiots in our own state. Michigan and Penn State and Notre Dame are just carving up everything they want. And like, you know, we're battling Kentucky for the scraps. So Michigan State really, really targeted him. And you can read into that as you want to. But he, you know, didn't sign with them today. He is waiting probably to see what happens with Michigan staff. So there's still a pretty good chance, I think, of Michigan getting him. It doesn't seem like he's interested in anybody else.
That would be a major lift, but still not enough, right? Like,
Yeah, and that's when you have to start looking at the transfer portal, and that's not really going to come out, at least for a few more months. Yeah. So, you know, they're going to have to go to the transfer portal unless they have some offensive lineman to commit to convert or something, or somebody like, you know, someone down the roster is all of a sudden popping into a superstar. But even then, you need some guys who can contribute now.
Yeah, at linebacker, Junior Colson is the headliner, a top 100 guy out of Tennessee, who, as you mentioned with McCarthy, was one of the main reasons this class stayed together as much as it did. Seems like a really great guy. Has decent testing numbers, was going to be on the All-American team if that game actually happened this year. And a guy who has really changed his body over the past couple years. So was going to be a guy who I think recruiting sites looked at for a possible bump up the rankings and then didn't really get to do that because of COVID.
Right.
So, you know, he's a guy who fits the paradigm of like a modern coverage linebacker who is able to carry tight ends and even some slots down the seam. So he's a guy who I think is going to be a favorite to start as soon as the Ross/McGrone pairing ends up headed to the NFL.
Yeah. This is a guy that you can use at Viper a little bit right away. He's also got some pretty good edge rush. And like you said, he changed his body around. He was a wide receiver just a couple of years ago. And
yeah.
And like has wide receivers, and like was a fast wide receiver. So this is a guy who's got some major speed, could play off the edge. You know, he gets the OLB designation that the sites give to anybody who's not, you know, wearing a neck roll these days. But he's, you know, that kind of player, and you can use him on the field in a lot of ways before you get, you know, I've been talking about all these like fun defenses that they have these days that use a lot more hybrids. And some of those jobs are pretty easy. It's like, okay, stand back there and then be really fast. And this is a really fast guy who can stand back there, and looking at Michigan's linebacker depth after all the transfers and whatnot, they could use that.
Yeah, and another point in his favor, he moved to the United States from Haiti as a 10-year-old. And just Michigan's track record with immigrants on their team has been extremely good. So Darbo, Pay,
Chesson.
Jehu Chesson. Like, those guys keep their noses clean and work their asses off. So that's always a positive. Tyler McLaurin is the other linebacker who's definitely in the class. He's out of Illinois, and he's another smallish guy who's going to be a gap shooter and hopefully a good coverage guy, but you know, will he hold up against the Wisconsins of the world is kind of the open question about him.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a tweener the other way. he could grow into either a big thunken linebacker that, you know, a 3-4 kind of guy. Reminds me a little bit of the Wisconsin inside linebackers that they always get, who just, you know, has that that ability to just kind of shoot a gap. But he's also a guy who could even bulk up and be an edge rusher eventually, too. You know, Brandon Jennings, the guy who flipped to Maryland today, very similar player to him, just kind of like the three-star version of him. And another guy that, like, you know, Michigan, I think, might have had some locker room problems in the past and was trying to look for guys who were going to be more of a, I don't know, guys who have a personality that they're looking for to kind of help share the coach's vision in the locker room. Either way, he's certainly one of those dudes. Todd Howard knows him a little bit. I don't think they overlapped. I think Howard was coaching at his next stop when McLaurin came, but certainly knows him and knows all about him and was raving about that guy. He's like, this is a guy that every single team needs, a guy like that in their locker room. Just somebody who's going to be working harder than the dudes next to him and convince three more guys to work hard. So, I'm glad they picked him up, and I'm glad that, you know, I'm not glad they lost Brandon Jennings, but I'm glad they had him still in the class when Jennings left.
Yeah, and then Jaden Hood, who may or may not stick in this class, when we'll decide in the late period. A little bit squatter, projects to be a little bit thicker down the road, and he could be a Devin Bush-ish player. You know, obviously don't want to compare anybody to the best right. linebacker in program history, maybe pretty close, but he's the kind of guy who's a, you know, three sport athlete who does track and also wrestles. He's a guy who, you know, Michigan would do very well to hang on to, I believe.
Yeah, and you can go with an Ian Gold or Larry Foote if you want to back away from Devin Bush.
Yeah, if you want to back, yeah,
right. Right. Basically, kind of, he looks like a running back and plays like a linebacker. And I think that for a while we were really concerned about losing him to Miami, and I don't know if that is still actually even a major threat. It's more just like he has not seen Michigan, and like you said, it's probably smart for him to wait around. He also had a terrible year at Aquinas. He transferred into that program, and then, you know, they had other linebackers who transferred in, and he kind of got lost in the shuffle. So he wasn't playing very much. When he did play, he kind of, you know, had some noticeable screw-ups, and that was it was not a great year for him. It wasn't a great year for anybody, but
I mean, we should point out that he did transfer into a new school, did have to learn a new defense, and, you know, some reports from Florida towards the end of the recruiting cycle say that he made a major improvement over the course of the year. So,
right.
You know, not ideal, but I don't think it was quite that bad.
Yeah, and what I'm getting at here, I don't think it knocks him as a prospect, because as a prospect, it's his athleticism and his, you know, he's willing to stick his nose into pretty much any situation. But he's a, he might be a guy who's not really going to be available to fill your depth chart in year one.
Yeah, which is something that I don't think that is unusual for linebackers, because that's probably the most difficult position on defense mentally.
Yeah.
The only two secondary members in this defensive class are McBurrows, who we believe will stick with Michigan, but is still announcing his decision in a couple of hours. He's a three-star quarterback out of Florida with an 11 flat, 100 meters. Doesn't have a listed 40 time, but that's like probably in the 4.6 range. You know, a guy who gonna probably look a lot like Michigan's current crop of cornerbacks, unless Michigan gets pretty lucky.
I mean, he's a guy that they talk about his speed, which is different than a lot of the guys on Michigan's roster. He's a smaller dude. He's kind of an Andre Seldon. No one's going to remember Brandon Williams, but like that's the comp in my mind. Like, you're kind of a smaller cornerback who's got pretty decent speed and just plays hard. Like, he's in on all sorts of plays. Andre Seldon, maybe, but like, Seldon is, you know, very short, and McBurrows is just kind of short. I think McBurrows is probably not the 5'10 he's listed at, but he's also not like 5'6 or something.
Right.
And, you know, there was a point, it didn't materialize in anything, but there was a point when Ohio State kind of was contacting him. Miami has certainly been all over him. They've been pursuing him throughout this whole process as if he was... Now, they came in late, I'm sorry, but since they came in, they've been coming after him like he's a four-star. So it's plausible, but we've said that about Michigan cornerback recruits past, and here's our room. So I'd like a cornerback at least to start, and then we can go from there. So, yay, he's a cornerback.
And finally, Rod Moore, a 5'11 safety out of Clayton, Ohio, ranked just inside our 3.5-star range, which stops at 500 at number 499. You know, kind of an average-size safety who doesn't have explosive athleticism, but familiar with the position. You know, a guy who I believe will be available early in his career to play, possibly in a rotation role, depending on how the class in front of him develops.
Yeah, he's Tyreek Kennell. And they both played in Ohio. So
yeah, I could have just said that.
Yeah. And they both played in Ohio, so you wouldn't be the first person to say it either. And another guy that Ohio State kind of poked around at, I think with him, this is according to Ohio State message board, a guy who apparently knows their coaches, who said that like Ohio State wanted to see if Moore was willing to wait and see how their class came about, and he said no, and that was their level of interest. But then they kind of came back around on him too. So Notre Dame wanted him a bit too, and Michigan really kind of identified three safeties that they wanted at the beginning of the process. One of them went to Notre Dame. One of them blew up into like a five-star and committed to Florida. That was the guy out of Donovan McMillan out of Pennsylvania. And then this was the third. So, you know, at least they got one guy that they really wanted. I'm glad they held on to him because Bob Shoup was his lead recruiter, and Shoup has kind of not been around and is almost certain not to be around as soon as they have the opportunity. So I'm glad that they held on to him. And, you know, they had some pretty good safety recruits last year, so they're not like dire need right now because those guys are on their way up. But it's good to get an athletic safety that they like. And like you said, they could kind of plug him in right away. He doesn't seem to be too far behind.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back with some final thoughts on where the class is and where the program is as a result.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGLO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Welcome back to Hamgirl Radio 6.7. Was that right? Was that right?
That was actually so. Almost as correct as the last time.
So this class is not yet wrapped. Mike Dudek said something on Twitter of the fact that they're going to go get some more guys. Who those guys might be are unknown. I mean, Benny did not sign with Michigan State. And then George Rooks is a four-star defensive tackle out of New Jersey who's uncommitted. And Michigan has been after heavily. Most of those crystal balls have moved to Penn State, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's visiting Penn State tomorrow. Well, so that's if he gets out of there without a commitment to Penn State, then like maybe the thing is open. But yeah.
So I mean, I wouldn't expect a whole lot in the way of reinforcements in the late period. There's just not really all that many guys on Michigan's radar who are still on the board.
No. And in defensive tackle, I know people have already started looking through the, you know, combing the rosters themselves, but you're going to have to get some grad transfers, and this is going to be a nice grad transfer market.
Doesn't have to be grad transfers this year. The NCAA just announced that they're providing a blanket waiver for anyone who transfers after this year. So you could get virtually anybody. So if there's a defensive tackle version of Mike Dana out there, please call Ann Arbor. Please.
I mean, the possibilities are so open. I love grad transfers for Michigan because it's so Michigan has a hard time getting credits to transfer, and this has been a problem years. Grad transfers, they don't have to worry about that because, like, you know, you're starting with a whole new school, basically. You just have to get the kid into that grad school, and usually our grad schools are pretty understanding about our needs for defensive tackles. Anyway, that's it's a route that's definitely going to be very open, like you said. The fact that the NCAA allows anyone to transfer right now, and there's going to be a surfeit of players. Like, the NCAA is allowing people to go way over their caps in order to hold on to their seniors next year, but you're not going to have more positions on the field, right? You're still going to have the same number of guys who can play. So,
yeah.
I'd love to see Michigan starter.
I mean, you look at this class, and it's the number 10 class in the nation, despite only having 18 guys in it right now. So it's a high-quality class, but there's just those two holes that Michigan had major issues with on defense this year that they just didn't address. and I can't say I'm too surprised, because I think everybody expects that there's going to be a house cleaning on the defensive side of the ball. But it's hard to see Michigan pulling in the kind of guys who are going to provide a sea change for a defense that finished, I think, almost in triple digits in yards per play this year. So, you know, if that's the case, if Michigan has a defense that's not that much better than this year's defense, are you going to be able to have the kind of season that warrants bringing back Jim Harbaugh? I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it would.
Is an 8-4 season good enough? Since they were 2-4 this year, not to me, but you know, you can see the scenario where they point to the improvement and then they're like, let's keep going with this. And I'm just, I don't know, kind of feels like you're in purgatory here and there's not going to be a resolution anytime soon. And this class is good news in the context of Michigan football in 2020, but is it good enough?
Defensive tackle and cornerback are two positions I've been on about for a long time. Because, you know, I say expensive and people think I mean just like, you know, the bag men are going to be throwing a lot of money that way. I mean expensive in terms of, like, people know that a defensive tackle is, you need a defensive tackle and that you need them to be talented. People know you need a cornerback and you know which guys are talented right away, right? You can't fake how fast a guy can flip his hips when he's 6 feet tall and can run a 4.5. Right, you see that ahead of time, and you know which guys are going to play. And in both those positions, the five stars, unless there's some other reason, typically work out. If you're building a guy, no build a guy is going to be able to save you next year, right? And so it was can you get an instant impact guy? They hired Sean Nua, I think, with the idea that he was going to be able to bring in some of these elite recruits. And Michigan's name got mentioned in the name with some couple of five stars, and it got nothing. Nothing. In fact,
airball.
Yeah. Now, and because he's gone, they're gonna lose. They lost Quentin Somerville, who was like the one dude that Nua actually did bring in. So you've
and
gone like
Somerville was a guy who was like top 10 in the earliest rankings, and then steadily fell over the course of his recruitment, and didn't have a good senior year, and was honestly way overrated in the final rankings. Because sometimes those guys, like, you have an early take on a guy, and you just can't let it go. So
right.
Guys like that don't drop off. So even that was kind of like, I don't know about that guy. So you really haven't. I mean, Chris Jenkins, I like as a prospect, and he'd be a great bullet in the chamber if you had a lot of guys, but they don't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're repeating ourselves a little bit here.
I know.
That's the thing.
You're compounding the issue. Like, have the Nua hire did not work out. It's pretty clear that he's going to be gone. And now you already had an issue there, and then you compound it with this year without recruiting, and a year where guys didn't get that much better. You know, Hinton and Smith did improve. And those are guys who are going to be your dudes next year. But you don't have anything coming up behind them. If one of them gets injured, if one of them slips, if one of them doesn't improve at the rate that he's supposed to. And they're going to be true juniors next year, and you got nothing behind them. And you've wasted another year of this.
Well, they'll be redshirt sophomores functionally.
Sure.
So, I mean, and that if these guys are still developing, like they have to look like viable NFL prospects before they decide to go, right? So, like,
yeah,
the time pressure is a little bit less, but just the numbers just aren't there.
Yeah,
and it's really tough to work your way out from underneath that.
Well, and you can't stay defensive tackle. You can't. It's just that's why, like I said, it's an expensive position. Teams are going to be identifying the guys they want early. Teams are going to be pushing really hard to get their guys. And, you know, Michigan had a five-star and a four-star defensive tackle in-state this year. The five-star, immediately off to the SEC. You know, there was no thought, no even second look at Michigan. And then the four-star, they're battling Michigan State for. And it comes back to that hire and comes back to this issue they've had since Greg Madison left, to be honest.
Yeah, it feels to me like the recruiting had slipped even before Madison left at defensive tackle. Like, you know, if you're thinking about the problem that Michigan had when Monet and Kemp were your defensive tackles, well, those are guys that Greg Madison recruited, right? Like, this didn't just start during his departure. So I think, you know, Michigan's had some major issues recruiting defensive tackles for 5 or 6 years now. And we see the results, and we don't see improvement in that department. So it's difficult to expect that the results are going to turn around.
I mean, it's been exacerbated by other things. Like Aubrey Solomon, I don't know what happened there. But, you know, that was a five-star.
Well, he was a flake, and you could always tell he was a flake, right?
Right.
But, like
Dwumfor's doing fine at Rutgers. Like, Michigan could have used that guy this year. And it seems like they drove him off, right?
Well, and then you have James Hudson, who you bring in as a defensive tackle, who has great defensive tackle film, mm-hmm. and you move him to OT. You didn't need that guy at offensive tackle, and eventually he doesn't get any playing time, and he decides to transfer.
Yep.
Like, that's, I mean, what are we thinking about here? What are we doing?
Yeah.
What is the plan? And, like, Phil Paya doesn't work out. So, like, this is something that's been a long time coming, and Michigan hasn't really brought in an elite defensive tackle recruit, if you don't count Rashawn Gary, who never played defensive tackle at Michigan since, Solomon, I guess, but there was always a high chance he wasn't going to work out.
Yeah. I mean, you're going back to Taylor and those guys, maybe.
But they didn't even get the guys like, you know, Mo Hurst. Mo Hurst was a 3.5-star guy.
Yeah.
Like, he had an Ohio State offer. He had a lot of arrows pointing in the right direction. But he was in the range where Alabama's not going to come in and drop six figures on him, right?
Yeah.
So if you pick up enough of those guys, you're going to get some hits and you're going to get some NFL players, and they just haven't done that enough. So they're going to have to hope that the two guys they did get are hits. And that's a long way for Mozzie Smith in particular. And I think he can get there. It's just going to be a drag on the program.
Yeah, and freshman defensive tackles are not freshman cornerbacks where you can just plug and play that guy and he's going to be. I mean, sometimes they're useful, but you know they're really sophomores before they're good. The cornerback situation is, at least they had a plan there. So the plan ended up being really dumb.
Get a bunch of guys who can't run to play press man. That was the plan.
But they're tall, Brian. They're very tall. They're huge and tall. So even if they lose those races, they're gonna get there. Yeah. So that's another position you can't fake.
We'll see what happens.
It's another position you can't fake, so I'm sure that their point was, like, let's try to moneyball this, right? Like, let's think of a way that we can get on something that no one else has thought of before. And I think that they looked at Channing Stribling and said, well, that. Let's just get a bunch of Channing Striblings.
I mean, Channing Stribling had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Like he could run.
Yeah.
He couldn't run like Jordan Lewis, but he could run. Like, the thing where you don't even bite on a double move and you still get beat over the top didn't happen to Channing Stribling. But, I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, coach the guys you got. Maybe a Donovan Green-Warren can play next year. Maybe Andre Seldon can play next year. Maybe you get some transfers.
Hopefully.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Jamon Green can play. That was a pleasant surprise, sort of.
Well,
we'll
see what happens.
You have any other takes? I wanted to point out Maurice Freeman went to Indiana. I was the Viper prospect that I liked.
Well, that's a good place for a Viper prospect. They got Marcelino Ball. He's a good player. But no, I don't have any further takes on football. And I hope this is the last time I have to think about it for several months.
Yep. Well, we're going to play some music, and you're going to have to talk as long as that music's playing. So you have a little bit of football left to get through. 30 seconds,
I'll just
to be
sing,
honest.
I'll 30 seconds about football. Well, you know, the problem is Michigan's in an improvement trap, and it seems impossible that we're going to see enough of a season next year so that you want to keep Jim Harbaugh around. So what's the point of waiting? You got to pay him next year either way. You got to pay the next coach either way. Just bite the bullet. Get yourself some Matt Campbell. Get yourself some Broken Stack. Three deep safeties. They don't know how to RPO that. That's good stuff. Is that enough?
That's enough.
Bust their ass.
Thanks for covering football this year, Brian.